newborn King. Amen. During the season of Advent, our Sunday Bible study crew did a deep dive into the birth narratives of Jesus and the doctrine of the Incarnation. And one of our several revelatory insights had to do with where Jesus was born. Was he really born in a barn? A stable? The Gospel of Matthew tells us that the three magi came to visit Jesus in a house. Yet the Gospel of Luke, which we just heard, notes that Jesus was laid in a manger because there was no room at the inn. Now, it could be that the Holy Family found their way to a house before the visit of the Magi, after the birth, before the Magi. If they were going to Joseph's hometown to be counted as part of the census, then presumably he had some extended family in the area. But back to that manger. Doesn't a manger imply barn? A barnyard shed is certainly the image we've been conditioned to see when we picture the nativity. Just look at our creche right over there. That barn backdrop is commonly depicted in centuries of art and in children's Christmas pageants across the globe. It also fits well with our theological understanding of Jesus. Jesus, the champion of the poor and the marginalized, born in the humblest of circumstances. Well, according to recent biblical scholarship, including the curriculum for our Sunday Bible study, it was more likely that Jesus was born on the first floor of a home. This is where animals typically stayed because they were so valuable to families in first century Palestine. Now, the home could have belonged to the innkeeper, in which case we have a story of abundant generosity with a stranger making provision for this young couple. Or maybe there was no innkeeper at all. Elsewhere in the Bible, the Greek word for inn is guest house. So if there was no room in the guest house, then maybe that guest house did indeed belong to family members who put up Mary and Joseph in their home. With animals and a feeding trough for a cradle, but no less in a home. In other words, the nativity story is not one of scarcity, but one of hospitality and loving kindness, and a story that I had gotten wrong. I wonder what other stories about God I've gotten wrong. I wonder what stories we've all been telling ourselves about God. Is your God the one who invites you into the tenderness of abundant love, mercy, and grace? Or are you still stuck with the story of a God who asks you to measure up or to prove your righteousness? Or who keeps a list of every impure thought and unkind deed? Maybe your God is withholding of love and blessing and happiness because you continue to struggle with the same old character flaw. Logically, you know that's not the case, but sometimes you can't help feeling that way. Or maybe your God doesn't demand anything of you at all. Recently, I've been interested in some research about how teenagers view God and religion. Sociologist Christian Smith argues that teens in America see God as some sort of cosmic therapist who responds in times of trouble but doesn't really ask for much in return. A God who props open doors of opportunity when we need them the most. It makes sure to spare us from undue suffering. A God who isn't involved in the day-to-day details of our lives, but shows up when needed to resolve a problem. Now, Smith describes this as moralistic therapeutic deism. Moralistic therapeutic deism. It sounds catchy. And it sounds like a God we fashion not only in our likeness, but to our liking. The same might be said for the God we co-opt for our own just cause. And I'm guilty of that one. At times, I have relegated God to the role of eternal social justice advocate, whose righteousness is not a divine attribute, but measured against my own prevailing worldview. Of course, God does watch over us and opens doors and cares about justice. But it can be tempting to leave God on the shelf until we need some help or we need some justification. There is so much more to the story about God. There is so much more to the story about us. There is more mystery, more depth, more beauty, and certainly more divinity in any one of us than we dare to recognize. The stories the world inclines us to tell about ourselves and one another are just too small. The labels we affix on people are entirely incommensurate with the vast vision of fullness that God sees in each of us. Tonight, I ask you to take a larger view, to see a larger story, to trust that the power that birthed God into the world in Jesus is also alive in you and me. And that power is something we can commit our lives to. In this way, we leave it to God to tell us our story. Let's go back to the nativity scene. One that's not quite accurate, as we know none of them really are, but that nevertheless holds truth about who God is and who we are in God's story. Now, perhaps you've seen the Christmas tree at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, a magnificently lit 20-foot blue spruce covered with angels looming over an 18th century Neapolitan Baroque creche. The scene is quite expansive and stunning with over 200 figures. There is, of course, the Nativity, with adoring shepherds and their flocks, the procession of the three magi, and their exotically dressed retinue of people from Asia and Africa, and most distinctively, a crowd of colorful townspeople representing lifelike characters with intriguing facial expressions. The theatrical scene is enhanced by charming animals, sheep, goats, horses, a camel, and even an elephant. There are also background pieces that create a dramatic setting for the Nativity, including the ruins of a Roman temple, several quaint houses, and a typical Italian fountain with a lion's mask waterspout. The Neapolitan creche describes in detail the Mediterranean harbor town's multicultural population. Now, 18th century Naples is a far cry from first century Bethlehem, but the vast display of people and activity with Jesus at the center invites the viewer into the scene. And with all the many angels gracefully suspended overhead, you're even invited into the heavens. It's a feeling of belonging. You belong in God's history. You belong in God's cosmos. You are part of God's kingdom because God chooses to dwell with you and in you. Christmas invites us into the mystery of God's story and into the mystery of God's very self. We live into that mystery by knowing and embracing and incarnating God's love that already lives deep within us. We bring that love up and we shine it forth. And when the God in you encounters the God in someone else, there is a spark, a burst of light, like John the Baptist recognizing Jesus in his mother's womb. On this most holy night, can you get in touch with the God you carry? Can you get in touch with the way God chooses to inhabit you? For that is the heart of your story. A story written by God who loves you immeasurably and sees boundless wonder in you. So yield to the movement of God in your life. Yield. You will know peace and you will know pain. You will know risk and courage, beauty and heartbreak, but most of all, you will know home. You will come home. Home to the God within and home where you have always belonged. Amen.